Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, November 17th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
We got a lot to talk about today. We got some financial numbers that were coming across the markets today, and certainly there was another situation, only this time in Germany. There was a bomb outside the German stadium, another soccer game, and I guess Merkel was supposed to be there, and we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. So the terror is spreading. But first, let's get to the gold prices, because gold really doesn't care about any of this terror that's being spread, because gold is down today. Gold is down $13.30 at $1,069.80. Silver is down 4 cents at $14.31. Platinum was down 13 at $857, along with palladium down 8 at $546. USDX today, of course, is stronger, 0.23 at 99.64. Crude oil was hit down a buck, down a point at 40.74. And the paper markets today, they were triple digits, but there was pressure on them all day. But the Dow did manage to be up 6 points, 17,489. The NASDAQ was up, you know, basically unchanged, up a point, 49.86. S&P was down to 2050. 10-year yield, 2.26%. Euro was 106, down 0.38. Both all the Asian markets, London and Germany, was up 2.5%. London was up 2%. Hong Kong, a little over 1%. And Japan was up about 1.25%. So it doesn't seem that terrorism is, and all the things that have happened, France and now Germany, doesn't seem to be affecting any of the markets. It's business as usual, and there's no fear when it comes to making money. There's no fear on Wall Street.
But there is fear about whether or not they're going to raise or they're not going to raise the interest rates a quarter of a percent. It's, you know, I mean, I'm being a certain amount just facetious here. It's the things we worry about and the things we traditionally worry about, things we currently worry about, there is a big difference. Traditionally, when we're having difficult times, as you point out, Things like gold go up.
Huh.
They're gold facing difficult
crimes,
terrorism, and the rest of that sort of thing. Historical, it goes up.
Are you kidding me? We just came off to 2,000-point decline. Of course, it did reverse itself on the Dow. We have all this terrorism. You have everything that's, the Middle East is, a powder keg. It's lit. It just hasn't exploded yet. And gold goes down. I mean, gold should be up over 2,000 points away. So but it will catch up, I believe. It will catch up. The cost of food, gasoline, shelter, and medical care last month rose. Consumer inflation might be moving up. And again, you mentioned now, will she or won't she be on track to raise the short-term rates next month in their December meeting? The consumer price index rose 0.2% in October after falling the prior 2 months. The average retail gas price rose 0.4%, but it still remains 28% below last year's level. Inflation has been held in check over the past year. Let's see, what are some number? Core inflation, which excludes volatile the food and energy prices, that advanced a little bit from September. Clothing and shoe expenses fell in October. Prices for new automobiles fell, but food shoppers paid more. Bread, bacon, chicken, turkey, fruits, vegetables all increased last month. The cost of hospital services shot up about 2% from September. And that's the largest monthly increase that has ever been recorded for this category.
For a hospital, for medical care?
Hospital services shot up 2%.
Mm-hmm. Why do you suppose that is?
Obamacare.
Yeah.
Of course, absolutely. Much of the airline fares, they soared 1.5% the past month. You'd think with the lower gasoline, the lower oil prices, they'd be a little more friendlier to the airline fares, but not so much. It soared 1.5%. So, the big question is, will she or will she? Is this enough inflation for her to make that decision come December 15 and 16? And I think everybody is pretty much, But I think.
I just wish. Oh, just do it. Will you please?
Oh, I know.
I don't
take
care.
Take us out of our misery.
Oh, just do it. We've been doing this. Will she or won't she? This has been going on for years.
But Al, not years.
Not just
Al.
As including Bernanke.
Well, we didn't have this so much with Bernanke. With Bernanke, it was the tapering. The tapering of the bond purchases. Are they going to taper? When are they going to taper? That went on for a very long time, and then this is the second thing after that. But someone asked me the other day, what happens when rates increase? What effect does that have on gold? I mean, you'll hear those who push a lot of paper that it will be bad for gold and so forth. But I found this little report. It was done by the National Inflation Association, and they push a lot of paper. I don't like all of their articles, but once in a while they'll come out.
You mean paper gold?
No, just paper investments and whatever. But every once in a while they'll come out with a great report. And here, this is one of them. There's been three times when there has been three major Fed rate tightening cycles. The first one that occurred between February 1972 and September of 1973, the Fed funds rate increased by a total of 749 basis points from 3.29% to a high of 10.78%. During this 19-month cycle, the price of gold increased from $47 to a high of 123, which is a peak gain of 162%. The S&P made a decline of 2.17%. So priced in terms of real money, gold, the S&P 500 declined by as much as 62% in 13 months. The second Fed rate hike cycle, say that three times, occurred between January of 77 and April of 1980. The Fed fund rate increased by a total of 1,300 basis points from 4.61% to a high of 17.6%. During this 39-month Fed rate hike cycle, the price of gold increased from $129 per ounce to a high of $850, and that was for a peak gain of 555.11%. It was 46 times more than the S&P 500, which they only gained 11.89%. The third major rate hike was between May of 2004 and August of 2006. The Fed funds rate increased by a total of 425 basis points from 1% to a high of 5.25%. And during this 27-month Fed hike cycle, the price of gold increased from $375 per ounce to a high of $654 per ounce for a peak gain of 74%. So gold gained 4.5 times more than the S&P 500, which had a nominal gain of only 16%. But priced in terms of real money, gold, the S&P declined by as much as 34.9%. in 23 months. So during these three major Fed rate hike cycles, gold achieved an average gain of 263% versus the S&P 500 averaging a nominal gain of only 8%. So that was in answer to someone who had asked me, what's the possibility of gold going up with the rate increases? And it's a very good possibility. So that was a nice little report, and I wanted to share that with you. And those are some nice gains for gold, very nice gains for gold.
And the implication is that if they raise interest rates again, if assuming that Janet raises rates 0.25% and continues to follow up, continues to raise interest rates, as this marks, December marks the bottom, the end of the near zero interest rate policy. And she raises 0.25%, then maybe another 0.25%, and so on. Implication is history indicates that should raise the price of gold.
Absolutely. Mm. U.S. home builder confidence sales, they slipped in November. Home builders are feeling slightly less confident in their sales prospects heading into next year. The National Association of Home Builders, Wells Fargo Builder Sentiment Index, that was released today, slipped to 62, down 3 points from 65 in October. And so, again, there's more pressure on the home builders. They're not as optimistic. And small businesses here. Here's an article that I know, Al, that tells you that it's over.
What's over?
Our economy. Small businesses have a burst of optimism. They plan to hire. This is what Bank of America's survey says, which even surprised Bank of America. And it's like, we're a little surprised that they are showing this optimism. But the survey that was released today by the Bank of America found that 56% of owners are optimistic about the national economy, eight percentage points from a survey last spring and 11 points from one taken a year ago. So they're out there trying to get loans, trying to make some spending, and they're optimistic. So, you know, they're a little late.
Well,
they're a little late to the game.
Syrians, once the 100,000 Syrians enter the country, I'm sure they'll give us an economic boost. They'll be buying things, and markets will improve. And it's not as if we had high unemployment or whatever, and these Syrians would be looking for jobs and unable to find them. I mean, they will satisfy the employer's demand for more labor, and I'm being oddly facetious again. You know, it's just, what is people thinking about?
I don't know. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that here shortly. I just wanted to get in some other news. There is other news that's going on and so forth, and it is interesting. I saw where Congress, I guess, they want to not fund these Syrians, but it's in the UN is saying, no, you're going to take them. So we'll talk about
I'd tell the UN, you got 24 hours to get out of town.
Well, we would, but
surround that UN building with a bunch of tanks and give them 60 minutes to vacate the building and 24 hours to pack their bags and get the heck out of town. And then we would let the put the demolition corps in there, drop that building into rubble. Wouldn't even be coming back.
Well, here's another. There was Statoil announces it's going to exit U.S. Arctic petroleum leases off of Alaska's northwest coast. So with these lower gas oil prices, again, another major oil company is abandoning its plans to drill in the Arctic Ocean off the northwest coast of Alaska. They made this announcement today. It's giving up 16 of its company-operated leases. The Norwegian company is also abandoning its stake in 50 Chukchi leases that's operated by ConocoPhillips. So again, this announcement comes on the heels of an earlier decision by Royal Dutch Shell to abandon drilling in U.S. Arctic waters for the foreseeable future. So here you have some major oil companies with the lower oil prices that are abandoning the any drilling up in the Arctic Ocean off of Alaska. And why would they? Why would they continue? Because guess what? Iran is going to be adding 500,000 barrels of oil exports after their sanctions are lifted. So why would they want to continue with the low oil prices knowing that these 500,000 barrels of oil from Iran are going to be flooding in the market? And Iran says, we don't have any worries about selling the 500,000 barrels. God willing, it will be realized, and they should not be concerned about price. Others should be. So.
Well, they're going to cut price.
This is what Obama wants. Here he's going along with the deal for Iran, allowing them to pull off all the sanctions. So now you have these major oil companies that were going to be drilling off of Alaska, which should have lowered the price of oil anyway, which we might have, perhaps had a benefit, a stake in it. But no. Let's get our oil from
Iran. Well, I think it's evidence. This is another evidence. How is it that the oil industry did not anticipate this price decline? I mean, this is something major. Prices were up over $100 a barrel. Now they're down nearly $40 a barrel. How did that happen without anyone? At least there may be a couple of voices in the wilderness that predicted this, but by and large, the entire industry failed to anticipate this problem. And the point to that, I mean, they've got economists, they've got people working for them. This is the sort of thing that you should be able to anticipate if you have an economy that's running in a predictable manner. The fact that no one picked up on this, all right, oil is going to fall $70 in a matter of 15 months or so. Who picked up on that? Anyone?
No one.
It's evidence that no one really knows what's going on. That's the point of this. When a whole industry fails to pick up on this, on this kind of a decline, it's evidence that people don't get it. And the whole thing is unstable. It's irrational. Nobody knows really what's going on. People are just trying to hang on and survive, which, from my perspective, again, this kind of instability, this kind of volatility, this kind of mystery, it's the sort of thing that should encourage people to get some gold. Sit back and say, wait a second, the world is a little bit irrational. Maybe it's time, and now the price is cheap, let's see if I can get some. Shall we take a break, Melody?
I think we shall.
Let's do it. We've got some commercials here for you folks to listen to, and Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the3w's.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
AU, $5 Liberty gold piece is $350. That includes your shipping costs. We're becoming a little limited on those coins based on that price. The regular price on those are running $360, that's regular price. It's a $10 savings on a quarter ounce of gold. So you're looking at about almost a full ounce of gold, you know, $40. It's a significant savings, significant special for $350 for an AU $5 Liberty gold piece. We are limited in those numbers. I'm just about out of them at that price. So make sure if you're interested to call us, visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter, and our archives are there on the website. And you can listen live too. If you have any questions, you'd like to send us by email, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. That's discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And we're going to talk about, the terrorists and so forth. But I do want to make sure before the end of the program, we talk about the gold bit.
Gold bit?
Gold money, gold bit gold, whatever you want to call it, bit gold.
Okay, I believe I know what you're talking about.
Well, I'm glad you do. We'll talk about that in the next segment. So,
all right, here's talking about terrorism. Here's something from the Washington Examiner, and the headline is Poll. Terrorism surges to number one issue. Most want ISIS attacked. Terrorism has vaulted to the nation's number one issue as Americans say they are as concerned about attacks as they were after the Boston Marathon bombing of 2013. A Reuters poll said that virtually everybody has heard of the ISIS attacks in Paris, pushing terrorism into a tie with the economy. So the two number one issues, if you can have, can you have two number one issues, Melody?
Sure. Why not?
Why aren't they two number two issues?
Both.
Are they two number one issues or two number two issues? In any case, pushing terrorism to a tie with the economy, not global warming, as Democrat candidates have claimed. See, Barack Obama wanted to go to a meeting in France. I believe that's where they were going to have their climate control meeting. And he wanted to be the star for doing whatever he's doing on climate control. And now these lousy terrorists have upstaged the president. Somebody's going to have to do something about this, Melody. They are interfering with the president's grandiose ideas about global warming. In any case, details of the poll, about a third of Americans are concerned about their safety across a number of public venues. 60% of Americans say that the U.S. should do more to attack ISIS. A majority of Americans say that taking refugees from Syria makes the host country, that would be us, less safe from terrorism. People are strongly divided on if countries should take in refugees anyway. 40% say it doesn't matter. Even if they're going to be terrorists, we still have to take them in. Can you believe that? I mean, that's the implication. 40% of this, according to 40% of the American people, say it doesn't matter if they might be terrorists. Let's bring them in anyway. All right. Or bar refugees from ISIS countries. And that's 41% that say, nope, don't let them in here. Our national concern, now this is an interesting story because it's become the top story. And it's a little bit strange. All right, they had a bad hair day in Paris. I get that. Does that really justify terrorism becoming the number one story here in the United States? I wonder. Is our national concern about terrorism justified? Is it exaggerated? Is it wise? Or is it grounds for more government excess that will only tend to diminish our remaining liberties? In other words, is terrorism a credible issue? If it is it a dangerous issue so long as a politician like, or politicians like Rahm Emanuel and Hillary Clinton cling to the idea that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste? Will this situation, are we going to react wisely to whatever happened in France, or will we be pushed and shoved and cajoled to react in a way that's really not very wise, in the sense that we did after 9/11, passed the Patriot Act, nobody read it, they voted for it without having read it, you know, one of the most shameful moments in American history, voting for laws that they haven't even read. And then we have to live with the resulting police state. And is it a good thing? Is it a justified thing? And I don't think anybody's got a solid answer. You can't turn your back on the threat of terrorism. There is a basis for it. You can't turn your back on it and let people die on the one hand. On the other hand, you can't let the threat of the deaths of a few 100 people or a few thousand people be used as grounds to sacrifice liberties and rights.
I agree with you, Al. The problem is this, and they do use these crises to for more government excess and for more laws, and to where we do lose and parts of our liberties and so forth, because they don't offset it with things that really make a difference in preventing from something like that happening here. Oh, you can get all kinds of reports saying, well, all of it is mumbo jumbo, it's not real, and it's all set up. But you know, that's fine and dandy. Look at our borders. If they were serious about protecting this country, it wouldn't be through laws and legislation and taking away our rights. It would be fixing our borders.
Mm-hmm.
It would be looking at these refugees and saying, you know what? Maybe we should take a second look at this before we just let them. What the heck are they all leaving Syria anyway for? You know, there's, you know, it's.
You know, part of the problem. talk about it. I've talked about it on this program before, but they, insofar as people come to this country, they think all you got to do is get in the door, get onto the landmass they call the United States, and you can get rich or prosperous or whatever. But it's not. The prosperity does not flow from the country per se. It flows from the culture. If you want to come to this country and keep the culture you had in the country you're trying to escape, guess what? You're bringing the very problem with you that you are seeking to escape. So, oh, I want to be a Muslim in the United States and get rich or be prosperous or whatever. It isn't going to happen if you're going to bring that culture with you. That culture is not conducive to prosperity. It's not conducive to a secular lifestyle. And I'm not saying that it's bad, but I'm saying you have to understand that your culture can be a detriment. It can be a great advantage. It can be a great detriment. If you want to hang on to your culture, hang on to it. But don't sit there and say, I want to come to the United States. I want to retain my culture. I want to retain my language. And then if I don't get rich, it's because I'm being discriminated against. No, it's not. It's not because you're being discriminated. If you don't have the right values, you know, this is something that's as old as that saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
I was just thinking that, Al.
That is a great minds, Melody. This happens whenever we get our little tinfoil hats and we're both wearing them at the same time.
It's easy to see the problems. It's easy to critique. It's easy to. I can't even imagine what it'd be like if you had a family member or even being in a place where you've had that type of situation that France had this weekend. You might think totally different if you were actually one of the ones being shot at and where you had hundreds of people laying around you that are dead, blown apart. I mean, so, you know, it's, you know, I can't even imagine. But yet I do
imagine.
Know.
And
no,
you have to keep
I can't.
You have to keep it in perspective. We live in strange times. And they will,
like people,
they'll push all of us to do some strange things and adopt some strange ideas before we're done.
It's just like, and I'm not going off on a discussion on drugs, but it's those who want drugs legalized. You know, until you've had someone or association, you know, whether you've been involved yourself, whether you had a family member associated, until you're actually involved in that type of situation, you know, it is very difficult to see the correct answers and so forth. But, you know, it does make a difference. But let's fix the problems. And, you know, I'm going back to Syria. We do need to fix our borders. We do need.
No, I agree.
You're right. We can't do anything in this country when we're financially bankrupt.
Well,
no,
we keep
borrowing
more money and going. Melody, we'll never be bankrupt as long as we can get our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren to agree to pay the debt. Mm-hmm. And even if they don't understand it, we're just going to leave it to them. We'll bequeath it to them, and somehow they'll pay for our debts. We'll run up the money. We'll run up the debt. They'll pay for it. It's insane.
It is.
It's immoral. It should be criminal. Right? It's like me running up a debt. It's like identity theft. All right? I get hold of somebody else's MasterCard and I go out and spend a bunch of money on somebody else's MasterCard. It's wrong. And the same thing is wrong. We should be running a balanced budget all the time. If you want something, pay for it. Don't want to pay for it, don't ask for it. This idea that we can run things on debt, on a debt-based monetary system, and in a government that's constantly going deeper and deeper into debt, and leave the debt for who? The people who had the benefit of whatever it was we spent the money on, or subsequent generations? You know, if I were a young man, I would tell all the people my age to go to the hot spot. Right? I'm not going to pay your bills. You ran them up, you pay for them. Right? We're not going to leave these. These kids are being left with a debt that will prevent them from buying their own homes, that will prevent them from starting their own families, that will prevent them from raising their own children. And what are we getting for that that's so valuable that we can essentially cripple another generation or two of Americans? and do it without their permission, without their understanding. They're sitting here trusting the adults to behave like adults. The adults are saying, oh, I don't have to obey. I don't have to be an adult. I don't have to be responsible. I'm going to vote for Obama, and he's going to give us a free lunch, Melody. Free lunches for everybody. It can't work. It can't last. Sooner or later, it's all going to blow up in everybody's face. And when it does, there's going to be a lot of senior citizens sitting around, of which I am one. They're going to be sitting around saying, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. How could this happen? I'll tell you how it can happen. How have you voted for in the last 20, 30, 40 years? How many times have you voted for some irresponsible fool who promised you something for nothing? How many times have you allowed? How many times have you not voted? And let the morons take office. We have made our bed. We have not yet been forced to lie down in it, but we've made our bed, and it's going to be... When the time comes, they finally say, there's your bed. Go sleep on that. People say, are you crazy? That doesn't look comfortable at all. Yeah. Well, you made it.
Yeah, we got a couple of calls coming in. We have Jim from West Virginia and Joe from Arkansas. Let's first go to Jim with from West Virginia. Yes, he was first. Good afternoon, Jim.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I like to hear from Joe Alexander, too. I always listen intently. Joe from Arkansas. Okay. Let's talk about perspective. And America is such a good Christian nation. Adhere to the golden rule, I'm sure. So we go to Iraq, murder 1.5 million there. Thou shalt not murder, but it's okay if I murder. And then we have Libya. We finance that little shebang. I've heard anywhere from 250,000. Let's see, 300,000 dead people in Syria. That's about 2 million. And we don't hear those words in the mainstream media. But let's knock off 150 in Paris and this huge collective OMG out of the mainstream media. What goes around comes around, baby. Now, the West is real good at making the world bend to their will and socking it to them, but they ain't too good at taking it. So to be honest with you, I think it's kind of makes me feel good that maybe we might feel some of their pain, because I have nothing against Islamic people unless they kill, bombed, raped, and mutilate, but we've killed, bombed, and raped, and mutilated all over the world. I think it's about time that we look at ourselves in the mirror. And I've said too much. It really does upset me. I've heard too much.
Well, we can hear in your voice. Thank you, Jim. You know, what are we doing in the Middle East? Where did we get the job of policing the world? Why is it up to us to solve all their idiot problems? One of the worst things you can do, for example, with refugees, I agree with Jim, we have no business going over there and shooting and bombing these people. But we have no business saving them either. They've made their bed over in the Middle East by adopting cultural values that are keeping them in an almost medieval society. If they want to stay in it, fine. I don't have an objection
to
it, but don't drag me into it, and don't say, come save us.
They don't want to live the way we do. That's the problem. They don't want us there. We forced our culture onto them, and they don't want to have anything to do with it. So you're right. You know, what are we?
And I don't want anything to do with it.
And you know what, Al? It's called life. Yeah, it's called life. And yes, if we help these people, we should help them by helping them grow things so they can sustain themselves in whatever and however they want to live, not by trying to place our values and our culture onto them.
Well,
but
you know,
help
it's
them
not
live.
Even placing our values and our culture onto them. We are placing the government's values and the government's culture onto them, and there's a difference. Our culture historically was to mind our own business. Use gold and silver for money and a bunch of other things that are spelled out in the Constitution. And the government says, screw that. We're going to run the world in a different way. We're going to run America in a different way. We don't have an obligation to maintain this country. We're going to work for the New World Order and do things that no one really wants, but nevertheless, they appear bent on subjecting us to these changes. Let's take a break for some commercials. We'll be back in a moment on Financial Survival, and Joe from Arkansas will talk to us at that time.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. Alfred Addis, Melody Cedarstrom, Financial Survival. Got Frank made a point. You know, we talk about all the poor refugees. Well, the refugees are refugees are trying to escape countries where thousands of more Christians are being murdered by Muslims than are being the few hundred Muslims that are being killed by Christians in the United States are. Europe or wherever. That didn't make much sense the way I explained that, but you got to recognize who is really your adversary and who is your mm-hmm. compatriot, who is your brother, and the rest of that. And somewhere along the line, you got to look down and say, look, what is best, not just for me in the egotistical sense, but what is best for me, what's best for my neighbors? You know, one of the things I like about Donald Trump, he's responding to this. And Trump, he says Obama's Syrian refugee plan to cost, whoop, that's Sessions, that's a different, hang on for a second. Trump warns Syrian refugees could be one of the great Trojan horses. He's concerned that they're going to be smuggling a bunch of terrorists in with the refugees, and he says we cannot let them into this country, period. We have no idea who these people are, and we are worst when it comes to paperwork. This could be one of the great Trojan horses. You know, one of the things I like about Trump is he seems to habitually express a kind of common sense that's based on what's best for America. That's all, rather than what's best for special mm-hmm. interests. Most politicians have a plan. They got something to sell us, that somehow they're going to support special interests, and thereby, when they support special interests, they diminish common interests. When they do what's right for a handful, they do what's wrong for the majority. in order to justify their plan to support some special interest in this country, outside this country. Those politicians devise complex theories and presentations to pull on our heartstrings, to persuade us to do or to support, or at least to sit quietly and allow some program that's clearly contrary to most interest, most Americans' best interests. Trump, on the other hand, doesn't seem to be driven to present some complex justification for some grand theory. He just says, look, this program is smart and good for most Americans, so let's do it. Or, in other situations, this program is dumb and contrary to most Americans' interests, so let's not do it. Trump doesn't come off to me as overly intellectual, all right? But insofar as he relies primarily on some degree of common sense, maybe doesn't need to be a great intellect. Maybe common sense is enough to be president. In fact, maybe a man without common sense is inherently unfit to be president or senator or congressman or federal judge. Don't need the grand plans. It's obvious what needs to be done here. Trump can kind of see that. Look, don't let him in. That's all. Don't make a project about it. This isn't about racism. This isn't about a bunch of things. It's just, look, this is trouble. Don't do it.
We got a couple of callers and a question from email. Right, so
well,
let's
what do you want to do first? Let's
go ahead and get Joe and then the next caller.
All right, Joe, what you got for us?
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to thank Jim from West Virginia for his compliments, and thank you very much, Jim. And Jim, you sound like a very good and very intelligent man yourself to me, and I always enjoy your calls. Okay, Al's been talking about how the Muslim religion is not particularly conducive to prosperity, and I just wanted to put out a couple of reasons why possibly that might be so, and, you know, I think it would be interesting to analyze maybe the reasons why that's not so, if it is true. And so I remember some years ago I read a book by a Canadian health author named John Toby. And John Toby went to visit the region of Hunza in Pakistan because the Hunzas were reported to be, you know, among the healthiest and most long-lived people in the world. So a health author was interested in visiting them and see how they lived and see how they ate and everything like that. And John Toby said in his book that the Hunzas were more prosperous than their neighbors. And they were all Muslims. The Hunzas were Muslims and the neighbors were Muslims. But he said that the Hunzas were kind of, you know, just nominally Muslims, and they weren't particularly interested in, you know, all the observances of the religion. They didn't really follow all the things that a devout Muslim was supposed to do. And so they spent most of their time working and producing wealth, and therefore they were more prosperous than their neighbors, whereas their neighbors would stop whatever they were doing five times every day, spend quite a bit of time praying. And so they lost a lot of time from work and producing, you know, for their religious observances. So John Toby thought that was why the Hunzas were more prosperous. And then I remember in 1972, I was living in Toronto, and I met a Muslim man, and he invited me to come to the mosque that night. So I did. I was curious about the Muslim religion. I was curious about all kinds of things then. And so I went with him, and it was a very big mosque, and there was a lot of people there. I had no idea that there was such a big mosque in Toronto and that there were so many Muslims in Toronto at the time. And there's probably a lot more now. But anyway, I stayed there for about 2 hours, and there were all these people there, and they were praying and chanting and doing all these religious things. And it went on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And after about 2 hours of it, I just got completely bored and left, and I have had no desire whatsoever to maybe become a Muslim ever since then. But apparently they spend an awful lot of time, you know, with their religious ceremonies and observances and something like that, which would seem to cut into whatever time was available to work and produce some wealth and be prosperous. So that might be one of the reasons. And now finally, there was one more thing I wanted to say, but I just can't remember it just right now.
Here's one for you.
Other point I wanted to make. Yeah, go ahead.
I've seen reports, and I don't clearly remember the number, but the Muslim world, according to at least one report, they only generate 10, 15, 20 books a year. Now, if you're going to have an advancing economy, you have to be creative. You've got to be able to grab hold of new ideas. You've got to be able to espouse new ideas. And they are so tied to their Quran that they don't get into it. Right? There isn't going to be an innovation coming out of Muslim countries. They may be able to capture technology from other countries and duplicate it and the rest of it, but there won't be you won't see the same sort of innovation that you see with a couple of guys working in their garage to create something that all of a sudden goes viral and they get spectacularly rich off of it. That is unlikely to happen. It's less likely to happen in Muslim countries than it is in other countries. And it's part of, look, going to have that culture. You want to live in that Quran. That's fine. I admire your dedication to religion, but you're going to pay a price for it. And you have to understand that. You can't just sit back and say, oh, I'm going to pray 5 or 10 times a day, but I'm still going to have my job. I'm going to be a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist or an executive. No, you're not. All right? You're not going to get that. I don't know. It's just, you know, people have to appreciate their culture and recognize that we carry our culture with us, both as a blessing and sometimes as a curse. You want to move into the United States of America? It's not just move, change your geographic location. You've got to change your culture. You've got to make it. You don't like living in Mexico? Fine. Then abandon the Mexican culture. You want to come up and live in North America? Come on up. But you're going to have to embrace that North American culture. You're going to have to, if you want to participate in whatever prosperity still remains in this country. You got anything else for us, Joe? We got one more caller.
Yeah, I did want to also mention that I remember about 6-8 months ago, something like that, I heard a man talking on a radio show. I forget who it was, but he said that Obama had a plan to destabilize the Middle East, make life there absolutely miserable, so that millions and millions of Muslims would flee the Middle East and come to Europe and America, and especially he wanted a lot of them to come to America, and that they've kind of actuated the thing out, and they figure once the Muslim population of a country goes above 2%, then inevitably that country will become a Muslim country. So, and he was saying that was the plan that Obama was working on.
Well, that guy is destined to burn someplace before the world comes to an end. He's got a hot spot reserved down in Hades. All right, Joe, thank you. We appreciate your call. We've got one more caller. Chris from California has something for us. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Mel and Al. Hey, the government is now referring our Social Security checks as a federal benefit payment. This isn't a benefit. Mm-hmm. It's our money paid out of our earned income. We all contributed to Social Security, and our employers did too. It totaled 15% of yours and my income before taxes. Instead, the folks in Washington pulled off bigger Ponzi scheme than Bernie Madoff ever did. Yep. They took our money and used it elsewhere. And, oh, yes, they knew that it was our money they were taking. They didn't have a referendum to ask us if we wanted to lend the money to them, and they didn't pay interest on the debt they assumed. And recently they've told us that the money won't support us for very much longer. Isn't it funny, you guys, that they never say this about welfare payments? But it's our fault they misused our investments. And now to add insult to injury, they're calling it a benefit, as if we never worked to earn every penny of it. Just because they borrowed the money doesn't mean that our investments were a charity. We should take a stand. We earned our right to Social Security and Medicare. We should demand that our legislators, we should be ringing their phones off the hook, demand that our legislators bring some sense into our government, find a way to keep Social Security and Medicare going for the sake of 92% of our population who need it. Then call it what it is, our earned retirement income. That's what it is. It's not a benefit. Okay. And some people in our, you know, that we relate to don't even take Social Security. They think it's a handout. It's not. We all paid into it. We deserve it back. They could have put it into simple annuities and we would have reaped benefits far many more times than what piddly amount it is. And now they want to rape the piddly amount you're currently getting.
Oh. I can
not
remember.
Enough.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your call, Chris. I clearly remember it's one of those things that stuck in my mind at the time, and I don't know why. My stepdad telling me back about 1959, talking about Social Security. You know, I was 59. I was a kid. I didn't clearly understand what he was talking about, but I understood what he said, and I remembered it for some reason. It just stuck in my mind. He pointed out that Social Security back then, if you took the same amount of money, they weren't putting away 15% of your income. They were putting away something like 3-4% of your income at the time for Social Security. He said, look, if you put that much away every month, every week, every year, whatever, by the time you retire, you'd have $1 million in the bank. And that was back. He could understand that back in 1959. As it works out, what is the interest on $1 million? Assuming we had $1 million in each one of our accounts, what is the interest? It's going to be, I don't know, who knows, $30,000, I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be more than what we're going to get out of Social Security. Plus, there's money left over that you can leave to your heirs after you pass on. But the government, by setting up Social Security, they effectively robbed us. We could have had that money. We could have been prosperous. We could have had a decent retirement. All right? Instead, we're going to be lucky to live, and we're going to be looking to get some good dog food, cat food. Boy, that cat food really hits the spot, you know. Dog food. It's what's for dinner. Thanks to who? Thanks to the government. Thanks to the Republicans. Thanks to the Democrats, who think they have such important things to do that they're entitled to rob the American people. It's all been wrong.
But it's also a prime example.
For years and nothing's been done to stop it.
It's a prime example. If people don't think that their retirement accounts and their IRAs are not at risk, here, government acknowledges that they've stolen your money.
Oh,
they
don't
acknowledge it.
Stolen it. For them, they're going to present it as a mystery. Gee, this is so strange.
There's a few that actually acknowledge it. So, yes, they're going to, you know. What do you think they're going to do with the trillions of dollars that are sitting there in your pension plans and your retirement accounts?
They'll steal everything.
Absolutely they will.
They'll steal anything that's not nailed down. If they can find it and it's easy to take, they're going to take it under one pretext or another. They'll say
absolutely.
It's emergency. They'll say it's terrorists. They'll say it's weather. It's unseasonably cold in the winter and unseasonably warm in the summer and unseasonably moderate in the spring and the fall. And that means they're entitled. They have no choice but to steal from the public. That's what they're going to do. And you got to recognize your relationship to the government is adversarial. They are not here to help you. They are here to help themselves. And if you get that, you should follow suit.
I got a quick question.
You got to do what you can. Take care of yourself. We don't have time, Melody.
I'm going to ask it to you. You're going to answer it. Is this ISIS creation and its involvement in Europe and elsewhere by Israel a way to orchestrate a clash of civilizations?
Well, I don't know who created ISIS. I hear a bunch of different reports. Clash of civilizations. It's what we need, maybe, provided that we defend our own. The clash of civilizations, from my perspective, a clash of cultures. Instead of pussyfooting around and pretending, oh, everybody's culture is the same and we can all be happy. No, we're not. Some of these cultures, you'll be dead by the time you're 45 years old. You want to live to a ripe old age? Grab on to a culture that can keep you alive and prosperous. Not all of them do it. We're out of time, though,
yes.
Melody. We are going to have to save some of our comments and thoughts until tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.